Happy holidays, Bucket Listers. Today on our podcast, we have one of the most beloved news anchors in Colorado television who just recently retired to a new life of sleep, travel, family, and we'll find out what else. What's next for Gary Shapiro, formerly of Nine News?
When they hired me for the morning show 33 years ago, I said, I'll give it a year or two and see what happens. And it just turned into a really good gig.
Welcome back to the Bucket List Community Cafe podcast. We're an online community journalism site for Denver. We're community inspired and supported, and we believe we build community by sharing our stories. I'm Vicki Collins, your podcast host and publisher of Bucket List Community Cafe. Today's guest is Gary Shapiro, who has woken Colorado up for decades as the anchor of Nine News Mornings. He and I go way back, and we're very excited to have him as our guest today. Welcome, Gary, and congratulations on a brilliant run.
Thank you. It's an honor to be here.
So how does it feel to be able to sleep in after decades doing morning news anchoring?
You know, I wasn't sure I could, but so far so good. It's only been 3-4 days, but I've been sleeping in until about 7 in the morning. I always slept in on weekends, so I figured I could adjust, you know. But some people can't adjust. They get up in the middle of the night, you know, to go to work, and then they retire, and they still get up in the middle of the night. And some of my friends are like that, but I don't think I'm going to have that issue.
It must be nice to know that on Sunday night you don't have to turn around and go in at 2 in the morning.
Oh, it was wonderful. Sunday night we went to a Wallflower show at the Gothic Theater. It was awesome, and it's like, oh, it's a Sunday night and I'm up past 7.
Good for you. After so many years, was it hard to call it a day?
It was. But they knew for about a year and a half my contract was coming up, and they talked to me and said, what do you want to do? And I'm an old guy, so I said, you know, I think this is going to be it. And so I gave them my year and a half notice, and we went from there. But it was hard, you know. I love the people I'm working with, and I love the show. I just, you know, it was just hard to get up in the morning. So I'm going to miss some of it, but not all of it. But having said that, they were nice enough to offer me a part-time gig. And so after January 1st, I'm going to go back and do some stories, one story a month that's going to run on the morning show. And I'm going to do 2 specials a year. And so I still got my hand in it a little bit.
That's amazing. Well, we're excited for you. In television, it's often rare to go out on your own terms. Mm-hmm. How do you manage that?
I don't know. A little bit of luck, probably. I found something that I really liked doing, and luckily they liked me doing it. And so that always helps. You know, sometimes you just can't quite get that fit, especially in this industry. Like I told you, when they hired me for the morning show 33 years ago, I said, I'll give it a year or two and see what happens. And it just turned into a really good gig. It was, you know, I'm off work at 11 in the morning. So when my kids were little, it worked out great because somebody's got to be home, you know, to pick them up after school and take them to baseball and this and that. And so it was me and all the moms. I did it. And it was wonderful. And so, and then after the kids grew up and moved away, I just kept doing it because I was used to doing it, and it was a great show. And so, yeah.
And you really had a tremendous impact on the community. I mean, people really loved you.
Yeah, I think morning shows are like that, whether they're in radio or on TV. You know, you're inviting somebody into your living room early in the morning, or your bedroom, or where, your bathroom, or wherever. And so it's kind of got that little personal element more so than, say, the evening shows do. And so, you know, the evening shows, people watch. I do believe they watch the evening shows more because of the content of the show. The morning shows, it's more of a personality-driven kind of thing.
Well, you certainly were a bright, wonderful personality wake up to in the morning. So let's go back. You're from Norfolk, Nebraska.
Right.
And went to the University of Nebraska. What was it that made you want to go down the broadcast journalism path?
You know, I decided somewhere in college, probably after my first year, that I wanted to tell stories. And at first I thought, maybe I'll try and be a newspaper writer. And then I'm certainly glad I didn't go that direction, only because I'd have probably been out of work a long time ago.
You'd have been retired a long time ago.
Right. But anyway, so I was in journalism school on kind of a newspaper track, and got to go to a conference that Larry Hatteberg was giving. And he's a photojournalist from Wichita, Kansas, one of the pioneer storytellers in the country. And I'm like, you know what? Telling a story to pictures, that's kind of cool. Maybe I could do that. And so I did.
So you led me into my next question, which was, who inspired you in your early days?
Yep. Larry Hatteberg did, and Daryl Barton down in Oklahoma City, and these guys were just, they were so good at what they did, and it was so new back in the 80s. A lot of people weren't doing that sort of thing, and so I learned from both of them, and as you know, I ended up in Wichita working with Larry, and it changed my life and definitely my career.
When I look back on it now, I mean, Larry Hatteberg also inspired me. And I remember being in an edit booth with Larry and just watching him as he edited. Mm-hmm. And he would explain to me about Nat Sound and opening stories up and letting them breathe and leading with most compelling video and writing to your video. And he was just a huge inspiration, not just to journalism, but to storytellers.
Yeah, I agree.
He's,
you know, I didn't realize until Larry taught me that a story has a beginning, middle, and an end, you know, and I would just throw a story out there and it, you know, didn't really end.
Right.
Just kind of stopped. And so, yeah, I learned a lot from him.
Yeah, me too. So we met back at Cake TV in Wichita, yep. As you mentioned. You were an anchor reporter and I was a producer. That was about 40 years ago. Mm-hmm. How did working in the smaller markets prepare you to take the next steps in your career?
Well, you know, Cake was a great place to learn, to work and to learn. There was a lot of news going on in Wichita, if you remember, and so we were busy. We covered everything from police strikes to, you know, the BTK murderer was a big story back in Wichita in those days, and I covered both those things, and there were race riots in Wichita, believe it or not, Herman Hill, and you know, the North Wichita riots, and so there was a lot of news going on, and you kind of learn by, you know, jumping in the fire and doing it, so I learned a lot in that market, and then, you know, got to Denver because of it.
As I learned in Wichita, it was kind of the place you were allowed to make your mistakes,
right?
But
mm-hmm.
if you did make a mistake, it was brought to your attention really, really quickly.
Yeah. I mean, we were all learning back then, so we did make a lot of mistakes. But like you said, they taught us how to do it right. And we had some mentors, and it was terrific.
And Cake was really masterful at serving its community. And mm-hmm. Nine News is too. Why is that so important?
Well, because they realize that putting content out there is only one of their jobs. You know, the other job is to be a member of the community and to do things to improve the community. And both Cake and Nine News were really, really good at that. You know, the health fair started in Wichita, Kansas at Cake TV. The general manager at the time was a friend of Martin Umansky, the general manager in Wichita, and a guy named Charlie Leisure at Channel 9. And he decided, I'll start, you know, the same community health program here. And so that's how all that got going, the Nine Health Fair served the community for 40 years, and it's still going in a little different fashion, but yeah.
So. Yeah, and Cake used to do all these events like the St. Patrick's Day Parade,
right.
Just very, very engaged in the community.
Yeah, as Nine News does, you know, they do the Parade of Lights every year, and they do Nine Cares, Colorado Shares, they raise money for food banks, and they're very involved in the community, and they realized a long time ago that if you want to be the number one station in town, you gotta to do your part to help the community. And so,
yeah. I saw you riding the float at the Parade of Lights.
My wave was pretty good, wasn't it?
You're really good. Elbow, wrist, yeah. wrist.
Right.
So you came to Nine News in 1983 and stayed put in Denver. Mm-hmm. What was it about Colorado that suited you?
Well, I always loved Colorado. I used to come out here to ski, you know, when I was in college. And even before that, with my family, we'd vacation in Colorado. And so I always loved Colorado. And so after Wichita, I decided, well, I need to move on to a bigger market. Why don't I give Denver a try? And I can ski at the same time.
And, there you go.
And I tried and tried and tried to get a job out here. And finally, two interviews came up, one at Channel 4 and one at Channel 9 at the same time. And so I came out here and did both of them the same week. And I thought, oh, dear, how am I going to choose? How am I going to choose, you know? And then Channel 9 offered me a job, and Channel 4 didn't. So it was really easy to choose.
Their loss, I would say. So, during your time at Channel 9, what were your best assignments, and then what were your hardest assignments?
Yeah, I started in the Boulder Bureau. We had four bureaus at the time back in the 80s, early 80s, 83. And so I was in the Boulder Bureau, and Dave DeLozier and I, who's the photographer, I was the reporter, but I also shot one-man band-ish in the Bureau sometimes. You know, Dave was on vacation or whatever, and I'd still go out and do stories. So that went on for a couple of years, and there was a lot of news happening in Boulder at that time, a lot of interesting news. They decided they were going to move me to Denver to be a reporter. So I did that. I came to Denver and did a lot more standing on the side of the highway during snowstorms and stuff like that.
Burr.
When I moved to Denver. And so, and Kim Christensen actually replaced me in the Boulder Bureau. She was the Boulder Bureau reporter after me. And then they moved her to Denver to be a reporter. And then this anchoring gig came up when Jim Benneman decided to go to Channel 4. He was our morning anchor. And so I replaced Jim on the morning show. And now we're both retiring at the same time. So
there you go. Were there any assignments that really stand out to you? Best assignments or hardest assignments?
Well, you know, the one that really stands out is when I was in the Boulder Bureau, I ended up at the Challenger launch, and you know, we all know what happened to the space shuttle, and that was going to be a feature. We had followed some kids, some Boulder County kids, who had won a contest through Ball Aerospace to go watch a space shuttle lift off. And I talked the station into sending me along with them because they thought it'd be a great feature. You know, these little kids, they'd get so excited, and it was the Teacher in Space program and that launch and all that sort of thing. And so when the Challenger blew up, of course, it went from a lighthearted feature to this huge national news story. And we ended up staying 2 weeks, and I think we were Gannett at the time, and I think Gannett had 10, 12 stations, and for 2 weeks I reported on all those stations from the scene, and so that was my first big story, and it was just huge and consuming.
How did that affect you?
Well, I learned kind of quickly how to cover something like that because, you know, I hadn't had any experience covering serious news for a long time. And so I did. And when I say a long time, I mean, I kept up with those kids. They were in grade school at the time, and I still talk to them to this day. And every 10-year anniversary, I'd go out and find the kids, and we would interview them and talk to them about how that affected them and their careers. And, I mean, some of them became aerospace engineers because of that and that sort of thing. To this day, I keep track of them. But it affected me. It was a lesson in how to put your emotions aside and cover a story. Then you know you can think about it. You can grieve after you're done working because you know you got to get information out there. People want information, and so yeah, you put your emotions aside. And so I learned that at the space shuttle, and I've used it, you know, hundreds of times since then. I used it during Columbine, that lesson. I used that lesson during 9/11. I mean, I was on the air for both those, Yeah, it's just part of the job.
We do cover a lot of tragic
stories,
and you know, even though we need to be professional and cover them, it does affect us.
Sure. Oh, of course it does. Yeah.
It's challenging to balance.
Especially Columbine, you know, that, unfortunately, there have been, you know, hundreds of school shootings since Columbine, but that was the first big one. And, you know, we didn't really know what we were doing as a news media covering that. And we made a lot of mistakes on the air, but we did the best we could, and it was challenging covering Columbine.
I was working with NBC Network News at the time, and it was like 6 weeks of nonstop coverage. And mm-hmm. I remember about 10 days in, things finally started to settle a little bit, and I had an opportunity to take a few minutes and go walk the memorial
over at Clement Park.
That had been set up at Clement Park. And I remember after just going and going and going, just finally completely losing it at the memorial, just falling apart from so much emotion.
Yeah, I mean, I remember going home talking to my kids. I had a daughter in high school at the time, and you know, they were well aware of what was happening, and a little bit freaked out. But you know, that was a lesson for all of us, including kids.
So lots of reporters and anchors aspire to the network. Did you ever think about going down that path?
I thought about it. But I never really followed up on trying to do that. I think part of it was we were just so ingrained in Denver, and the kids were growing up here, and it was just a really good place to live and to work, and the station was good. And I, you know, if you want to go to the network, you got to move usually. And so I decided, no, I'm just going to stick here. This is good. This is a good job.
So let's talk about all the changes you've seen since you started your career. Mm-hmm. And broadcasting. What kind of blows your mind?
The size of the equipment. I mean, you know, and I remember back in Wichita covering the Herman Hill riot. It was a Sunday night, and I was the only Sunday night reporter, and there were no photographers. You know, we were one-man band back then, and so I remember standing out there, and the police were shooting tear gas, and people were running all over the place, and I was trying to shoot video of it, and I had this 40-pound recorder that you kind of carry on your back, and the camera was another 50 pounds, and then you had a belt, a battery belt to power the camera, and then you had another battery belt to cover the light, so you had all this crap on, you had 100 pounds worth of stuff on, and I'm like, I gotta move here, because all this tear gas is coming my way, and it wasn't easy to run with all that stuff on. And so now, you know, you can get a camera the size of your hand that has better video than that camera did.
Your cell phone, your
iPhone,
exactly.
Right?
So I'm going to throw out some words and just tell me how things have changed from your observations.
Okay.
So let's start with viewership.
It's changed dramatically. I mean, during the 1980s, you pretty much had three stations in Denver, and that was it. And so the viewers were split up among the three stations. Well, Channel 9 was the number one station even back then. I think they had something like a 50 share of the audience at 10 o'clock at night, which is incredible. That means half the people that are watching TV are watching Channel 9 at the time. And so big numbers, lots of people, and then, you know, in the late 90s, the internet came in, and that just changed everything, because people could get their news anywhere. You know, you could log in the morning and get your news from, you know, the New York Times or USA Today or NBC or whoever you wanted to. And then there were more stations in Denver, and then there were cable stations in Denver. And so, you know, the viewership is a pie, and that pie just kept getting split up. And so now, you know, if you get a 10-12 share at night, that's a pretty good night. You know, so yeah, viewership has changed a lot.
And how has that affected the people who work at the stations?
Well, you know, they sell advertising. That's the way stations make money. And You know, they're not selling as much advertising these days because not as many eyeballs are watching the news. And so, it's affected how much money the stations make, and that's affected the newsrooms, how many people work in the newsroom, and that's affected the content of the news because more people are working harder to put the news on the air and all that sort of thing. So it's kind of like the ripple effect because of how many eyeballs are watching the news.
So let's talk about trustworthiness. There's so much talk these days about how the news media isn't trustworthy.
Yeah. You know, I kind of quit, quote unquote, Twitter because of that. I used to be really, really active on Twitter maybe 5-6 years ago. And after Donald Trump was elected president, people just decided, you know, I'm going to take a pot shot at the media for whatever. And so they would tweet me and call me fake reporter and fake news and this and that. And they would put out misinformation and I would correct them. And we got into a fight on Twitter, and it was really horrible. And a lot of it didn't make any sense. So I just said, you know, I don't need to do this anymore. And so I still tweet to this day because I had to cover spot news sometimes, and that's a good way to get information out there. But as far as the other aspect of Twitter, and it's even worse now, as you know,
right.
In the last week or two. It's newsworthiness. That people always said, you're a big corporation and you slant the news to help that corporation. And, you know, I've been in the business 50 years. I've never seen that. Not once. You know?
So believe the news is trustworthy.
I do believe the news is trustworthy, especially local news.
And you've seen a bunch of ownership changes, too. I think from Gannett to Tegna, and I believe...
It didn't really affect the staff too much, I don't think. Gannett ran the station from 1983 until probably 10 years ago. And it was a huge corporation. They ran TV stations all over the country, radio stations, newspapers. They were a big newspaper company. And when newspapers started... decline because of, you know, readership for all kinds of different reasons. It was kind of pulling Gannett down, and so they decided we're going to spin off our broadcasting part of the business into a different company. So it was still kind of Gannett, but they needed a new name, so they named it Tegna. I don't know where they came up with the name or
go
what it
figure,
means.
You're right.
Yeah. And then Gannett still ran the newspaper part of the company, so they kind of divided into two. So, but now Tegna's getting ready to sell. So that'll be interesting. I mean, I'm only going to be a part-time worker, so I'm sure I'm not going to be affected. But or maybe I will be. I don't know. Maybe the new company will come in and say no more part-time workers. I don't know.
We've certainly seen in the market the impact of, hedge fund ownership.
Yeah, that's what it is. Yeah, it didn't work out too well for a lot of people, like Denver Post and so on and so forth.
How about the technology? I mean, you had talked about how big the stuff was and how small it is now, but how has the technology changed since you started your career?
I mean, just going out and doing a live shot back in the 80s, it took a lot of equipment and a lot of time to set it up because you have to have microwave trucks and sometimes you had to bounce microwaves off of other trucks along the way. And I remember doing I was covering a trial in Boulder one time. And we had to do a live shot out in front of the Justice Center there. And so in order to do that, we had to have a truck at the Justice Center and another truck up on the mountain, up on whatever mountain that would be.
Flagstaff.
Yeah, probably Flagstaff. Yeah, on the road up there, and we would shoot the signal up there, and then they would shoot the signal to Denver. And so, I mean, it was a major setup. Now it all works off apps on your phone, you know.
Or
a little backpack. You can do it either way, and it's real easy to set up, and you can get to a story and be live in 30 seconds.
In my basement, I have all these air checks of shows that we did at CAKE and at KRON in San Francisco, and We have 1-inch tapes. We have 3/4-inch tapes. I have a 3/4-inch deck down there.
Mm-hmm.
It's just amazing. Now it's just a link, you know? If
right.
you want to share your work, you share it on a link. And you yeah. don't have to send people air checks any longer.
Yeah, and tapes. I mean, tapes? What? I mean, when I started in the business, it was film. You actually had to go into a dark room and develop film. And then, you know, videotape was invented. And it was like, oh, my goodness, this is so awesome, you know? Even though we had these huge decks that I explained about earlier and that sort of thing, it was just quite the jump in technology. And as you know, now you shoot on a little digital card that holds, you know, 10 times the information those tapes did. It's pretty amazing.
And then how did cable television and 24-hour news change things?
Well, that changed things a lot, not only because it was more competition, but because as you... you know, alluded to earlier, people started distrusting the media because, well, I don't like Fox News, you know, and or I don't like MSNBC or whatever it was. And so they actually had commentators that slanted the news toward their, you know, their view of the world. And I think people thought all TV was like that
right.
after cable TV came on and started doing that. Well, it wasn't, you know, and isn't. But that's still happening. So,
and you had mentioned just now partisan news.
Mm-hmm.
Talk about that a little bit. I mean, we see a lot of that these days.
See a lot of it, and I don't know. I've never totally figured out partisan news because it's just what are you learning by partisan news? You know, you're watching somebody that reinforces your beliefs, so you're not learning anything new about your beliefs. You know, you're not hearing the other side so that you can think, well, maybe I'm not right about that or whatever. You know, and so I've never really figured out why it's so popular, but I guess people just like reinforcement of their beliefs.
And finally, streaming and the internet.
Mm-hmm.
How has that changed things?
Well, again, competition. You know, streaming is just another thing we compete against if you're on TV. And so, but rather than competing against it, Channel 9 back in the 90s decided, you know, if you can't beat them, join them. And so they started a very robust online part of the newsroom. The first in Denver to do so, everybody followed suit pretty quickly and built up their digital part of their newsrooms. But Channel 9 was really the leader in that, and they started streaming newscasts. Oh, they've probably been doing it 20 years now, you know? And so, yeah, it's a real deal, and they decided to, instead of fighting them, we're going to join them.
They were ahead of the curve.
They were ahead of the curve.
So news stations have worked hard at representation. How's that going?
It's getting better. It's getting a lot better. And it's pretty recent, I think. Recent, you know, maybe 5-6 years. They have decided, I think all the stations in town have decided we're going to try and be more representative of the community. But again, I do believe Channel 9 was a leader in that. You know, Channel 9 had the first Hispanic Latino news director in town with Butch Montoya, and he moved up through the ranks of the station. They didn't go out and find him. And so, you know, we've been doing that a long time. But now we're emphasizing it. Before, it was just kind of part of the newsroom, and we tried when we could to put different colored people on TV and to get different viewpoints, and when it happened, and it was good, and when it didn't happen, okay, whatever. Now, I mean, we really make a point of it. We really try to put diverse opinions and people on the air, and I think it helps your product, and I think it helps your viewership, and I'm surprised we didn't do it sooner, but at least we're doing it.
So what do you see as the future of news going forward? Are broadcast news's best days ahead or behind?
I think probably behind. But having said that, I think there will always be local TV news. And the reason they'll, and it'll be in different forms, as we've talked about. You know, you may watch it on your phone and not on your TV, but it's still local TV news. And it's because people want to know about their community. They want to know what's going on. They want to know what the weather's going to be like. They want to know if there's a traffic jam on their way to work. And so they may not tune in to the newscast for that, but they may go online to 9news.com and look up traffic and that sort of thing. And so in some form or another, there will always be local news, and it'll always be popular, I think.
And these days, there's quite a bit of hyper-local news mm-hmm. as well. I think...
Like right here.
I think Denver has a rich ecosystem of hyper-local news.
I think so. Yeah. And, you know, you guys getting into this, I think, is just invaluable. It's just really a terrific idea. Boy, you talk about serving the community. You know, you guys are serving the community. And so you're competing with TV, but you're serving the community. It's awesome.
Well, thank you for that. Bucket List Community Cafe mentors the next generation of journalists. In fact, we have... I believe 15 or 16 students with us this coming semester.
Perfect.
From the University of Colorado at Boulder and Metropolitan State University of Denver. What advice do you have for them?
Advice. You know, I do speak a lot at journalism schools. I go back to the University of Nebraska once or twice a year and talk to students there. I go to CU once or twice a year and talk to students there. You know, I tell them the same thing. It doesn't matter what part of the profession you get in, whether you want to be a newspaper writer or whether you want to be on the radio or whether you want to be a digital presenter or if you want to be on TV, learn the basics because they're all the same. And the basics are and always have been who, what, when, where, and why, right? And so you can't forget that. That has to be included in everything you do. And so as you get to be a better storyteller in whatever form you're telling that story, don't forget the basics. You know, that's why we're here. We're here to inform people.
So folks who retire often say they just knew it was time. What made you know it was time?
Well, I'm old. I'm old and I've been getting up in the middle of the night for a long time. I still loved what I was doing right up till the last day. And so I didn't get tired of it. I just decided that... there's other things I want to do rather than get up in the middle of the night.
Leads me into my next question, which is, what's next for you? Is there a third act in your future?
Yeah, I mean, I will do some work. You know, I'm not the kind of guy that just, you know, can go fishing. You know, I hate fishing. So as I explained, I'm going to do some work for Channel 9. I've got some other freelance projects with people in town. They're not TV commercials. I'm not going to do what Adele's doing right now, although she's getting paid really well for doing that. They're with production companies and that sort of thing. And so I'll have my hand in the business a little bit. But beyond that, my wife Katie and I have been talking about doing some trips. Now we're going to do them. You know, I think we're going to go to Spain with some friends probably later this summer. We've talked about doing an Ireland-Scotland trip, and so we're putting the planning stages of that together. And I'm still a skier. I love skiing, and I'm going to ski during the week now, which will be a life changer because skiing on weekends is just such a hassle.
Well, so, we'd love you to be an advisor for Bucket List Community Cafe.
I would absolutely consider that. I love what you guys are doing.
So one last question. You live in North Denver.
Yeah.
What are your favorite things to do here, just locally and hyper-locally? What would you like to be doing just in the community here?
Yeah, you know, we love living there. We live over in Perry Row, just off of Colfax, and we've only lived there 5 years. We lived 27 years in Westminster, And that's where our kids grew up. And you know, we had a fairly big house and a lot of yard work and all that sort of stuff you hear all the time, and decided let's downsize. And since we have just loved it. I mean, I love urban living because you can walk, you know, you can walk places. I can go to 5 different breweries within walking distance of my house, you know. Couldn't do that in Westminster. I love the diversity of the everything, of the restaurants, of the people, of my neighbors. You know, it wasn't like that in suburbia either, and so it's been a great experience, and I'm still learning new stuff all the time.
Well, journalists are always supposed to ask the last question, which is there anything I missed, or is there anything you'd like to add?
No, you have talked about most times when I see you, how awful you were at KTV, and that we called you Twinkie, which, by the way, was a term of endearment,
of course.
Right? Yeah,
right,
yeah,
right.
Of course it is, yeah. And I would just say, you know, we were all awful at KTV. We were just, you know, we were just kids learning our profession, and sometimes it was painful.
We would get 1 hour Martinized when
yes.
Martin Umansky would
yes,
call
we would.
You.
Yes, we would. Oh, my goodness. Yeah. I remember covering a story. There was some sort of a tourist boat up in Topeka, Kansas that capsized during a storm, and a whole bunch of people got killed, and it was a horrible story, and they sent Dennis Decker, a photographer, and myself up there in the middle of the night to cover it. We got there about 2 in the morning, and there were cops everywhere and firefighters and ambulances, and it was still a big scene, and we opened up the trunk of the car to get the recorder, because you had to have a recorder out. There was no recorder in the car.
Oh,
and
no.
This was before cell phones. We had no way to cover that story.
Oh,
and we had driven 2.5 hours, and we got in the car and we drove 2.5 hours back.
Oh my goodness.
And talk about getting Martinized.
Yeah.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah, I remember him calling you in the booth when you had a spelling error. Yeah,
anyway.
I was definitely a baby producer at Cake. We were all young in our careers
then. Yes, we were.
But we've come a long way.
Absolutely. Yep.
Thank you, Gary, for joining us, and best wishes for your very well-deserved retirement.
It's been a blast. Thank you.
And thank you for listening to our Bucket List Community Cafe podcast. Check out our website at bucketlistcommunitycafe.com for more stories and also to contribute. We're in the middle of our News Colorado Needs fundraising drive, and every penny you contribute, up to $5,000, will be matched by the Colorado Media Project. If you like what we're doing, please consider a contribution. We are community inspired and supported. Please also subscribe to our weekly newsletter, stay updated with us on Facebook and Instagram, and remember, we build community by sharing our stories. Happy holidays and best wishes for a joyful New Year, Bucket Listers.